let's be real. Lawsuits are no fun, but with Paulson and Nace, at least, they are a little easier. With two DC-born partners, Paulson and Nace will fight for you the way only a Washingtonian could. Paulson and Nace handles medical malpractice, wrongful death, and other complex injury cases involving negligence. So if you have been hurt or lost a loved one because of someone else's mistake or negligence, call Paulson and Nace for a no-obligation consultation. Visit www.paulsonandnace.com or call 202-463-1999. Today on CityCast DC, so there has been a lot of controversy around DC's public housing agency, and our guest, Steve Thompson from the Washington Post, has been the guy uncovering a bunch of it. His latest involves the question of whether the city is overpaying landlords. He's here to explain why it matters to people on public assistance and also to anyone else in the DC housing market, too. Today is Monday, March 25th. I'm Michael Schaefer, and here's what DC is talking about. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so last time we talked, last year, the federal government, via the HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, was looking at DC's housing authority, its shortcomings, and now there's a new investigation which you've been reporting on. Can you explain the lay of the land to us?
Sure. In 2022, we understood that HUD had done a review on the DC Housing Authority, and they were looking at all kinds of stuff. But one of the things they were looking at is what you call writ reasonableness, which is, you know, how the housing authority was determining how much to pay landlords for holders of low-income vouchers.
So this is just for folks who don't know, there's a class of folks who have these vouchers, and rather than going to a, you know, publicly owned public housing facility, they can take this onto the privately owned market, and rather than paying themselves, they are able to give this voucher to the landlord and get an apartment.
That's exactly right.
And what you've been reporting on is that, like, the amount that the government is paying for these vouchers is way more than these landlords might charge if, like, you or me showed up.
Right. In many cases, that is true. And that's what we did a story on last year, which is, you know, when we did an analysis of some of these payments, it became pretty clear that the housing authority was overpaying to the tune of like millions of dollars a year. In addition to what they started in 2022, which really appeared to be looking at housing authority compliance with all these regulations, we have an investigation that HUD started last year at some point that appears to be focused on landlord compliance with these rules and regulations. Because some of the onus is on the housing authority to make sure that they're not overpaying, and some of the onus is on the landlords to ensure that they're not overcharging. And it seems like, from what we can tell with some of the paperwork, that HUD has two separate inquiries into the situation. One is looking at compliance by landlords. The other is looking at compliance by the housing authority. In many cases, they were overpaying, which is a particular circumstance where a landlord could get, let's say, $1,600 on the open market, and maybe they could get $2,500 from the DC Housing Authority.
So $900 more dollars from the Housing Authority than they would be able to fetch otherwise.
In many cases. And landlords had figured out, you know, where they could do that and with what types of units, and were making businesses out of that arbitrage.
You cite in your reporting this building, it happens to be near my house at 4801 Connecticut Avenue, where the Housing Authority has paid $2,648, including utilities, for a one-bedroom. And they recently advertised one-bedrooms for $1,700.
That's right. And you could look at the records that go behind the rent stabilization system. Rent stabilization is something we have in D.C. where it restricts the amount that landlords can raise rents. So in some cases, that holds rents down. But what you can see in looking at the records around that particular building is that in many cases, at least, it is not rent stabilization that's holding it down. It's just the market that's holding. It's what people are willing to pay that's holding it down. And what people are willing to pay for a one bedroom there appears to be right around $1,700, which is what they're advertising. And what the housing authority has been willing to pay is, as you said, $2,648.
So I might regret asking this question because I suspect the answer is fairly wonky, but how is this supposed to work? Like, what are the landlords doing differently slash wrong?
Yeah. So, I mean, to try to answer that question, it might be useful to point out that the housing authority says they have fixed that process. What they were doing before middle of last year when they said they fixed it and what they're doing since then is a little hard to explain, but in just basic terms, it's almost like they were sort of ballparking by neighborhood what various types of apartments might be worth. So like in this neighborhood, a one bedroom might be worth this, and that's what we'll give you. What they're supposed to be doing and what they say they are doing now and what HUD requires you to do is to look at each unit individually and come up with what you think is a market rate or would be a market rate for that unit. And if you're a housing authority, you're not supposed to pay a landlord more than that amount.
And yet they haven't been doing that.
They haven't been doing it. Years ago, in what probably started out as sort of a well-meaning effort to save money, they started sort of ballparking these things by neighborhood. And that kind of morphed into a really haphazard method of setting rents by neighborhood. And some of those were accurate, some of those were high, some of those were low, but landlords figured out where they were high and where they could make money by leasing to voucher holders instead of market rate tenants, and were exploiting that difference in different pockets of the district.
It's time to get dressed up, DC. So Others Might Eat is having its Young Professionals Network Spring Soiree. That's to help raise funds for homelessness in DC. The gala is on the evening of May 17th at the National Museum of Women in the Arts. There will be live music from DJ Heat from the Washington Wizards, photo booths, food, and even a special appearance by a former actor from Pretty Little Liars. Wow. There will also be a canned food drive, so be sure to bring a few cans to support Sum's Food Pantry. Grab tickets before they're gone at some.org/springsoiree. That's some.org/springsoiree. See you there. So, in addition to the, you know, the waste of taxpayer money here, it seems to me one of the places where this kind of affects all of us, this is a city where famously that, you know, there is a dearth of affordable housing, not just for very poor people, but for people making middle-class incomes, young people starting out. And if they know they can get $2,600 from the city, why would a landlord want to make an apartment available to you or me?
That's the big question. I mean, at the very least, they might tend to ignore a complaint or, you know, a request from a market rate tenant because they might be happy to see that tenant go. In many cases, a voucher holder might be less likely to complain about poor conditions or shortcomings in a building. So there is some sense that if you can sort of encourage your market rate tenants to leave and make room for a voucher holder, who on whose behalf the housing authority will pay a lot more, that might be a good business decision.
I'm wondering though, you know, on the landlord side, I suspect somebody might be inclined to say, look, yeah, it's a $900 difference between a voucher holder and a market rate person, but we, the landlords, take on a lot more risk when we have voucher holders. They have various prejudiced attitudes towards voucher holders. These are illegal. But maybe they are just treating that $900 delta as the cost of doing business.
Well, and I think that's probably true in a lot of cases. And one thing to note is that a lot of the recent vouchers given out in the district in recent years have gone to people in the Permanent Supportive Housing Program. And this is a program that is built for chronically homeless folks who have any of various disabilities, but primarily have problems with drug addiction or mental health. And so, you know, if you have a tenant like that who has special needs for intensive case management and they're not getting it, and oftentimes they don't appear to be getting what they need here in the district, the landlord has taken on a real special situation that they may not be prepared for, and that $900 delta, you know, may not end up compensating them for.
Right. And just like to be clear, under the law, they're not allowed to discriminate against prospective tenants based on their employment history and things like that. But in the real world, you know, that happens.
That's right. Legally, they can't turn away somebody because of the source of income. Can't turn somebody away just because HUD or the housing authority is paying that rent. Practically speaking, they have a fair amount of discretion on who they're going to lease to and how much leeway they're going to give somebody as far as if there are paperwork delays, which is something that happens commonly when you're dealing with government subsidies. Sometimes the government can cause a lot of delays there in getting everything in order. And there's nothing in the law that says a landlord has to wait for all that and pass up a tenant who has the check ready to go.
That's a looked at from the safety net provider's point of view. If the goal is like, let's get people in sometimes desperate situations, let's get them into housing, maybe thinking about whether they're getting the best possible deal is not their top priority.
I think that's probably true. You know, if you're a caseworker and you've got somebody that you're really trying to help and you want to get them into a home as fast as possible, the government's willing to pay more than the place is worth, so be it. That's going to make your job easier, and you figure you're probably helping somebody out by doing that. The downside to that, and why HUD tasks the housing authority or all housing authorities with trying to prevent those types of overpayments, is at the end of the day, you're trying to help as many people as possible. And, you know, if you're to the extent you're overpaying, you're probably going to end up helping fewer people.
So other than telling people to scour the apartment rental ads more carefully, is there an obvious solution here?
To hear the housing authority tell it, the solution is what they said they have done and that they did last year, which is to implement what's called a rent reasonableness process. And what that means is basically that they're going to follow federal law and HUD regulations and look at each unit individually and do some kind of analysis to figure out what that unit might be worth on the private market and decline to pay more than that. And if, you know, that's what they say they're doing, that's what HUD mandates all housing authorities do. And if the DC Housing Authority is now doing that, then it's possible they have started to fix the problem.
The DC Housing Authority, as you guys have reported, got a new head honcho last year. There was turnover in the face of some of these failures. What does this ongoing, this new investigation say about the management?
Well, I don't know that we know yet how the new management will affect this. I mean, we do know that the new director has a lot of housing experience. The former director did not have housing experience. So, you know, that's a positive sign to think that maybe the new director is going to approach this in a different, maybe a better way. But really, the jury is sort of out here. I mean, one of the things that HUD had asked the authority to do back in 2022 was to do its own analysis of whether there had been overpayments, and if there had been overpayments, to figure out how much they had overpaid and actually develop a plan to repay HUD. Here we are more than a year later, and the Housing Authority has yet to do that. So that's one of the things we'll have to wait and see, is what this new administration, how they wrap up that process, and whether they actually do the analysis and what it shows.
So that one consequence of this investigation could be it's going to cost DC financially. They're going to have to make Uncle Sam whole.
That's definitely something that has been in the air as a possibility, and it's something that I think district officials would very much like to avoid.
So you've been watching this for a while. I put on your prognostication. How do you see this progressing? If everything goes as it should, what'll it look like in 6 months?
I really have no idea. I mean, one thing that's still sort of up in the air is in some of the cases where it appears DCHA, the Housing Authority, has been overpaying, even though they've fixed the process, they're grandfathering some of these payments. So if there have been overpayments, some of these overpayments could be continuing. And I've asked the housing authority whether HUD has signed off on that and whether that's going to keep happening. And they have not given me a firm answer on that, basically saying they're still reviewing that.
So basically, landlords too could face consequences for charging the housing authority more than they would charge a civilian.
Theoretically they could. And I think one of the places where that could end up mattering is, as the housing authority has talked about grandfathering these payments, one of the things that officials have said is that it wouldn't be necessarily fair to go back and downwardly adjust a payment that a landlord has been counting on. And so that's one reason for grandfathering some of these payments. But if you look at it the other way, there is some onus on the landlords not to overcharge. And it appears like that's one of the things HUD is looking at, is landlord compliance. So when you start to think about if landlords have not been in compliance, if HUD were to find that, that would maybe put grandfathering some of these rents in a different light. One of the things that's interesting is what HUD asked for in the newer of the two inquiries, which is focused on landlord compliance. One of the things they asked for from the authority is all the forms that landlords have filled out to create contracts with the authority for these units. So on these forms, the landlord is supposed to certify that they're not charging the authority more than they would charge a private renter, and they're supposed to even give comparables. Here's what we have leased four different, you know, comparable units for on the premises to unassisted, privately paying tenants. On a lot of those forms, which I've gotten some of these through FOIA, and you could see that sometimes landlords have just not filled that out at all. Sometimes they put comparables that appear to be not unassisted. In other words, a comparable that's just rented by another voucher holder, which kind of defeats the purpose of the comp. And so these forms are one of the things that HUD apparently is looking at to figure out whatever they're going to do.
Hey, thank you so much, Steve.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
And that's all for today here on CityCast DC. If you enjoyed the show, why not tell a friend, rate the show, leave us a review, and subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Bye.